You are listening to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. Welcome to This Book I Read, podcast from Beyond Cataclysm, where we talk to authors about a book that has stuck with them through the years for good reasons or sometimes bad ones. My name is Chris, he, him, also known as CM Lowry. I love reading sci-fi and recently helped release a book called ISBN Coffee, which is full of weird stories, many of which involve coffee and space. Find out more about that at beyondcataclysm.co.uk and more about me at allaboutchris.org or various places online as at CM Lowry Author. I'm not important though. Who have we got here in the studio with us?
Hi, I'm Juliet Kemp, they, them. And I also read a lot of spec fic of various sorts, and I write speculative fiction, various short stories in various places, a couple of novellas, and a fantasy series, which started with The Deep and Shining Dark and ended last year with The City Revealed, which is a queer norm epic fantasy set in the city of Marek, where various political and magical complications are occurring, including a revolution by the final book. Which is perhaps relevant to today's thing.
I think it possibly will be, which is a hint spoiler of what we're going to be covering. Do tell me, why have you come on the show?
So there's this book that I read.
So what book have you brought for us and why?
I've brought The Dispossessed by Ursula K. Le Guin. And why? Because I read it in, it was my late teens or early 20s. I've been trying to remember when exactly and I can't because that was a while ago now. And it kind of blew the top of my head, I think, when I read it. It was one of those books that you're like, oh my goodness, this has really made a difference to how I think about the world. Do you want me to talk about the book a bit more?
You will definitely be talking about the book a bit more, a lot more, in fact, I suspect, over the next half an hour. Ursula Le Guin is a hero amongst... I think we've all had encounters. I've not read The Dispossessed. I've read Wizard of Earthsea. I think the impact that they had on... and continue to... their legacy is massive. So give us a brief synopsis. We've already had a hint of revolution there. Give us a brief synopsis of The Dispossessed.
So it's sometimes subtitled An Ambiguous Utopia. And it's set on partly on Anaris, which is an anarchist society, and partly on Uras, which is it's a two planet system. So both planets think of the other as the moon. Uras, we mostly see the capitalist nation, which looks a lot like kind of Western capitalism in a slightly updated version. Anaris is a sort of extreme scarcity anarchist society, and Shevek, the protagonist, is a physicist who is visiting Uras from Anaris for various complicated reasons surrounding his general theory of time.
I'm intrigued. Just an extreme scarcity society. I mean, I understand what those words mean, but what does that mean in the book?
Anaris doesn't really support much in the way of crops or no animals. They have fish. It does have its own atmosphere and it does have its own things that you can grow there, but it's very, very barren. And in order to make it support human life, everyone has to work quite hard. Basically, it's not a sort of naturally fertile kind of place. Uras, in contrast, has much more in the way of like you can grow things, you can have animals. It's much more like Earth, basically.
Yeah, got it. So this person visits Anaris from Uras.
Other way around.
Other way around?
Visits. Shebek, the central character, is from Anaris, so he's an anarchist, and there's been no contact between the two societies, or very little contact between the two societies for a long time. But he runs into problems trying to explore his physics theories on Anaris, and therefore winds up going to Uras. And the book's kind of exploring some of the flaws of how Anaris works, as well as the positive aspects. So it's kind of about the successes and failures of both systems, and that's one of the things that makes it really interesting.
It sounds interesting. It also sounds like something that could be really complicated and like textbooky, but I don't think it ends up being too much that. But we'll see.
We'll get onto that later.
Do you have a quote for us?
I do have a quote from it. This is from quite late on in the book, in fact, when Shebek, the physicist, ends up addressing an insurrection, basically, on Uras. So a huge public meeting of maybe hundreds of thousands of people. And he says, "I am here because you see in me the promise. The promise that we made 200 years ago in this city. The promise kept. We have kept it on Anaris. We have nothing but our freedom. We have nothing to give you but your own freedom. We have no law but the single principle of mutual aid between individuals. We have no government but the single principle of free association. We have no states, no nations, no presidents, no premiers, no chiefs, no generals, no bosses, no bankers, no landlords, no wages, no charity, no police, no soldiers, no wars. Nor do we have much else. We are sharers, not owners. We are not prosperous. None of us is rich. None of us is powerful. If it is Anaris you want, if it is the future you seek, then I tell you that you must come to it with empty hands. You must come to it alone and naked as a child comes into the world, into his future, without any past, without any property, wholly dependent on other people for his life. You cannot take what you have not given, and you must give yourself. You cannot buy the revolution. You cannot make the revolution. You can only be the revolution. It is in your spirit, or it is nowhere." As he finished speaking, the cluttering racket of police helicopters drawing near began to drown out his voice.
I mean, that is probably the best quote anyone has ever read on this show. That was amazing.
It's such a cracking speech.
And it's like, it's a great speech, and then it ends being drowned out by police helicopters. You cannot buy the revolution. I literally just want to go out and spray that on some walls now. Yeah, that's interesting.
And I think it is actually, although it comes late in the book, I think it's quite a good, it is a good encapsulation of one of the things that Le Guin, I think, is getting at during the book.
Which is what?
The idea that revolution is a continual process, that you can't just say, well, we've done it. So, you know, Anaris is 170-ish years old at the point of the book. And one of the things, this is one of the really good bits, I think, of the book, one of the things that Le Guin is exploring is the way that things tend to sort of solidify or calcify over time. So she's kind of thinking about the need to tend anarchism, that power will tend to come back into a situation or a structure, that structures tend to kind of breed power. And the reason that Shebek ends up on Uras is because the person who should be his colleague but sort of is his boss at the Physics Institute doesn't like his ideas, and therefore will not promote them or allow him to print them. And so he's come to Uras because he thinks that there maybe he can work out these ideas and get them public. And then he realises that maybe that isn't going to work either.
I think the worry we have is that we could get super derailed into some very, very interesting conversations here. I loved that bit you just said there about, you know, that anarchism needs tending. And the problem is that you then land in like a who will watch the watchers situation. And I think the problem that you, I mean, I don't know your own personal political leanings and you don't know mine.
I'm anarcho-lefty.
Yeah, I'm probably kind of fairly anarcho-Christian pacifist, so I'm a bit weird. I think we'd actually agree on far, far more than we would disagree, I suspect, there. But the bit where the anarchism needs tending is interesting, because it's that who will watch the watchers kind of vibe. And, like, I think a lot of movements of anarchism that we've seen, and, like, lots of things of revolution, have ended up with some people who, my job's just here to make sure this revolution goes fine, then being points of not particularly brilliantness.
Yes. And I think Le Guin's argument, or certainly the what Shevek comes to, and of course the author is not necessarily the same as the protagonist, but I think in this case Le Guin would say this, is that the answer is kind of everyone. So it is the job, part of the job of everyone, to continue to be the revolution, to continue to challenge what is going on, and that you can't just sit back and say, we've done it, it's all fine. And she talks a lot as well. She talks about process, and she talks about the characters in the book, and Le Guin in other work talks about relationships as process as well, that it's not about means and end, it's about the process of being and how you do that. And I think this is all absolutely fascinating.
So I'm interested, I suppose, in one thing. So ultimately we are talking about a book, like, rather than like an entire like philosophical diatribe, we are talking about a book and story. So one of the things that I've got a friend who read Zen and the Art of Motorbike Maintenance, and I personally loved that book and found it very powerful. My friend was like, yeah, so I had to basically switch between like a story of which there wasn't really much, a lot of talk about motorbike maintenance that I have no interest in, and then some like stuff that I might have been interested from a philosophy perspective that was so dense that I actually like, so they just bounced off it massively. How is the story in this?
Very good. You've kind of got two stories, and they start from different ends and they come together. So it's, the structure's beautiful as well. Like, Le Guin's writing is beautiful. It's so well done. But you've got the story of Shevek going to Arras and seeing all this kind of excess and indulgence everywhere. And, you know, he's very well looked after by his physicist hosts, and the government are very pleased to have him and all this stuff. And so he's kind of working out what he thinks of that, and he's trying to do physics, and he realises what the government want of him and what he's about to step into. So there's that story, and which leads towards the end to him addressing the revolutionaries, potential revolutionaries. And I won't spoil the actual end, but so you've got that story progressing. And then the other story, which is interspersed sort of chapter by chapter, is him growing up on an Arras. So there is quite a lot of stuff, and this is one of the things I love about it, of how an anarchist society might actually work in detail. Because you see him as a kid, you see him being sent to a sort of work detail as a teenager to go and plant trees out in the desert. So in that, therefore, you have all this stuff dropped in about how they organise things. And that story goes sort of through time until they meet at the moment when he decided to go to Arras, and then you're effectively back at the beginning of the book. But there is a real story there. There's a story about him growing up and about him thinking about what various things mean to him. And, you know, he has a kid, there's a famine, there's all sorts of things going on. So it is a very political story. That is absolutely true. And Le Guin is, you know, very clearly trying to work out some of her ideas about this, you know, and in the book. But I certainly find it compelling. And even people who don't like Shevek as a character, which is a very valid position. I'm never sure if I do or not. He's really interesting, though. He's compelling.
Yeah. I think as a narrative concept, you know, there's a lot of books out there that jump between perspectives, between chapters. And I think it can be done really well. I've often found myself a bit unrooted each time, especially if the point of perspective changes a lot. You know, so I've read, I can't actually name a book specifically, but I've read a book where you know, there was one person who was the protagonist in one chapter and they weren't in any other chapter. You know, it was very erratic. But this one here, I think it gives you Ursula's got a real option of revealing details in childhood that can then be explored in like the following chapter in a way that can feel really natural without potentially could feel really fake in kind of, oh, I had this child experience of this. And then, oh, look, this happens in the next one.
I feel like if I went through and did a proper analysis of it, it would all fit together. Like, you could probably see that it fits together in ways that I don't know because I haven't looked at it in that kind of way. But I wouldn't say it feels fake. I mean, we maybe talk about the bad bits or the less good bits later. Well, and it's certainly a dense book.
What is your favourite thing about the book? And then we'll get on to challenges.
Favorite things.
You can have more than one. That's fine.
Ah, can I? Excellent. Okay, I'll limit myself to three. I think the first one and the thing that really got me when I read it at 20 or whatever it was this kind of detailed working out of what an anarchist society might actually look like. Because when I first read this, I'd read a certain amount of theory, and I kind of had a lot of ideas. But this, I mean, obviously, it's a story; it's imaginary. But this sense of, okay, this is how it might actually work. This is how people might actually really interact in this way, and it feels real in the sense of it feels like, yes, you can see how these characters exist and this society holds itself together. So that's one thing. Another thing is that Ursula Le Guin's writing is just beautiful. It's just lovely. The sense of place is so powerful. Like, I have a really strong sense of all the places that are described in it and the experience of being there. And the third thing we've already talked about, this central idea of revolution as process, of existing in the world as process, that you should think that that's the way to think about it rather than like doing this thing in order to get this thing. It's all about the journey, man.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned reading it as a 15-year-old, and I said about that quote that I wanted to go out and spray on walls. I've actually just spent the whole weekend helping run a youth camp, and I've come back and my wife said to me just now, she was like, you're just really annoyingly like high still. You're just really, and I'm like, all that like passion and energy, like I've absorbed it from all these youngsters. And yeah, I think if I'd read that when I was 15, it would have blown the doors off. What challenges do you have with it then?
You talked about your friend who found Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, you know, a bit challenging in how it's structured. And yes, I don't think it's the structure that's challenging. I think the philosophy and the story are well woven together, especially because Shevak and his mates, especially as teenagers actually, do have some of these philosophical discussions, and that reads like, yes, teenagers do that, that's fine. Yeah. But it is sometimes potentially a bit dry. I do think Le Guin's writing is deeply evocative, but it can feel a bit distant. I mean, deliberately, I'm sure. It's kind of, we mostly see Shevak, but it also pulls back from time to time. And I think some people would find it a bit much. I like that sort of book, so I'm fine. And I think it's worth reading, and I think it's got a really strong story, so you could probably get through it.
How do you find the... I think you are almost certainly far better read on issues of anarchism and on like kind of key texts of that than I am. How does it hold up as a demonstration of ideas?
I think, well, but I confess that I'm probably out of date. I'm not sure how, you know, if I was reading people who've been writing the last 10 years, for example, then I imagine that's been, yeah, she was writing in the 70s. So yeah, it's 50 years later. And like, but I think the central ideas still hold up. And in fact, if you tootle around the internet looking for kind of people who are on the left or anarchist reading it, most of them are like, yeah, no, most of this is great. Bad point, though. The gender politics is definitely, I think it's one of these things, she was trying, and for the 70s, she's trying to write like a gender neutral society, But actually, most of the characters are men, and I think the most present female character is Shevik's partner, and that feels a bit like it's not true that there are no women who exist in their own rights, but like it's the I suspect if Le Guin had written it, you know, 40 years later, she would have probably written some of that differently.
But it nearly fails the Bechdel test, then, does it? Like,
I think it probably does fail the Bechdel test, actually. Yeah, because we see it so much from Shevik's perspective. And Samuel Delaney actually at the time criticised that, and also criticised the heteronormativity. In that, again, I think Le Guin was trying, like Shevik, who just is almost entirely heterosexual, has a brief sort of fling with another chap who describes himself as almost entirely homosexual. And it's fine. Like, there's no kind of social opprobrium attached to that. They, you know, have a nice time for a month or two. But it's notable that the only gay character we see is kind of slightly unhappy. We don't see that character maybe making a partnership in the way that we see other characters.
Yeah, and
doing.
Like the whole of the site is basically like heteronormative. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't really fit with the massive level of anarchism in the society, you know.
Certainly not now, but again, I think there's a certain amount of, I think she was trying in the 70s to write this, and obviously Delaney, say, critiqued it at the time, but Delaney was writing from his own very different experience and was also way ahead of a lot of other writers of the time at thinking about gender. And of course, you know, Le Guin's Left Hand of Darkness thinks about gender a lot, but I'm fairly sure she said much later in life that, you know, if she wrote that 30 years later, she'd have written it differently, because she wasn't afraid to say that as she lived and thought, she changed her mind on some stuff, which is like, yeah, good for her.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I can respect that. You know, we've named our company's named after a John Wyndham book, and John Wyndham wrote in the 50s, and his female characters were very progressive for the 50s, you know, like in Day of the Triffids, the protagonist, like, basically has been cancelled by society because she wrote a book that dared to involve someone having some sex in it. At that point, but also she's the helpless woman who's helped by the male protagonist. So, yeah, literature's on a journey much as society is. Yeah. So you do have to model it that way.
In this, you do have, like, one of the two of the physicists that grown-ups, when Shevik is sort of a young man, you know, two of the people he really looks up to are women. And when he goes to Uras, where women are not allowed to do that sort of work, they're all like, women? Thinking? Really? And he's like, well, yes, that's a thing. So, you know, overtly on the page, it's absolutely being challenged. But I think it's difficult to challenge your underlying preconceptions of how the world works. So it's a difference between consciously being like, some of these people will be women, and putting women throughout your story in a kind of more gender neutral way. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I think I can see that. Or even you could even be, because I've read a brief kind of analysis of the feminism kind of themes or lack of themes in the book, and I think the point could be made. Almost like if you were trying to look at the anarchistic society as basically just not seeing gender because it's irrelevant to it, you can then fail to highlight gender in a way that highlights that it's not commented on, you know, like as in because
yes,
like as in and you, yeah, which can be a challenge.
But she was actively engaged with all of, you know, pretty much all of the active feminist discussions of the 70s. It's just that was 50 years ago.
Yep. I suppose I a question I have about it is, because I am, you know, there's a lot of ways that I am pretty, like, I'm anti-borders, like, pretty heavily. Mm. I do a lot of work with, like, asylum seekers and stuff, and, like, just there's some, I have some real challenges with how many aspects of our society work, and I just don't believe in politics for it. I believe in love your neighbour on a local level, and I'm not sure anything bigger than that works very well. But I also don't think a massive anarchist society would work, if I'm brutally honest. I'm as in because of how flawed the human condition is. And like, do you end up because it's interesting because you say how it comments on both societies and has critiques of both. Did it leave you thinking, ah, this, annoyingly, I agree that this has its flaws quite deeply and it doesn't really solve that? Or I'm just, what were your thoughts on that?
There are a bunch of ways in which I do find it compelling, and I think that there's a bunch of things that could work. I think another critique that's, this might be Delaney again actually, but I'm not sure, is to point out that it is an extreme scarcity society, and it's a society where if you don't abide by the ecological rules, then you're just not going to survive.
Yeah. So that does help enforce behaviour, doesn't it? Like,
yeah. So to the extent that there is no excess, so it's, you know, you can't, thinking, oh, I want more stuff. There's just not very much stuff to have. And it's much clearer that if you have more stuff, then the person down the road will have less stuff because there's no extra stuff. It's just not there.
My son, a few weeks ago, we asked him to cook dinner and he was very, very grumpy and refused to cook dinner. So we then got takeaway for everyone except him, and then he learned that you don't get dinner unless you cook dinner. Like, as in, so we were trying to enforce some.
So there's a critique that says that if you envisage doing the same society on, you know, for example, Uras, the Earth-like world, which where you can grow stuff and you have animals and all this, then it would be much harder because people would start saying, "But there's more. Why can't I have more stuff?" And I think it is certainly, it does not answer the questions of how enforcement works where the world itself is doing less of the work for you. Yeah. Like in Anaris, you know, pretty much most people have to work in a particular way in order for everyone to survive. And there are some people who don't. There's absolutely scope for people who kind of don't do their work postings, who don't entirely engage with the life of the community, and they still get fed and housed and that. They're sort of disapproved of. But you can't have a larger scale version of that because there's just not enough stuff.
Yeah.
I think if for the purposes of sort of trying to work out how this works, it does make it a little bit easier. Just not very much stuff.
And that can be a valuable like narrative tool, as in it makes, you know, it makes
absolutely.
If they were identical worlds, like as in it, having a stark difference of like flavor between the two worlds really helps kind of highlight those two different things as well. So why should people listening hunt out The Dispossessed for a read if you were going to kind of sell it in that kind of in a couple of sentences?
Because it is both politically fascinating and a great read. Like, it's straight up a good story. And I think it is one of the most important books in the genre, actually. It's another good reason to read it. But it's fun. It's a good read.
You've sold me, both on the discussion of it, and just, to be honest, just that quote sold me. Like, there's definitely books that don't have a quote that good anywhere in between the covers. Any other recommendations if people get on well with The Dispossessed? You're going to say lots and lots and lots of Ursula Le Guin.
Well, absolutely, like, read more Le Guin. My favourite of hers is probably Always Coming Home, which she wrote later in life, and it's like a collection of different bits and pieces. It's part sort of anthropological description of a far future society in probably what's roughly California, but in the distant future. And I think that's another version of certainly anarchy adjacent, collectivism adjacent. So it's part like anthropological study, and it's part like stories and myths that they tell each other. And it's part descriptions, and it's a very sort of, it's like a scrapbook. It's wonderful. Samuel Delaney's Trouble on Triton was written in response in part to The Dispossessed, and is another bash from a similar era at envisaging a kind of anarchist-ish, but generally genuinely gender neutral and also much more sex positive and non-heteronormative society. Be warned, I think that one, as Delaney's stuff tends to be. It's probably an over 18s book, but do check. Modern stuff. Becky Chambers, A Psalm for the Wild Built, the Monk and Robot books.
Yes.
Is again thinking about collectivism and anarchist aligned stuff. And A Half-Built Garden by Ruthanna Emrys came out a year or so ago, and is envisaging how we on a not so far future Earth might have rearranged some political stuff. And in a slightly different angle, this is more about if you're interested in the politics and different ways of arranging governments, in the Infomocracy trilogy by Malka Older. Is a really interesting exploration of a totally different way of doing voting, and having these sort of little mini governments.
Mm.
That's a really long list of recommendations.
No, that's fine. I'm going to add one to it as well. I haven't been following the discourse on whether or not I'm allowed to like Robert Heinlein. I think probably I'm going to give it with any kind of, maybe not, but as in there are some interesting themes in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, about... And you've got a moon and the Earth, similar situation. Yep. But what I found really fascinating in that book, it's a caricaturized version of like actually how you do things, but the way they do political. And the way they do revolution in that book, and like how they intentionally manipulate like media and things like that to bring about positive changes in society. I found very interesting in terms of like mobilization and organization.
Oh yeah. I always read Heinlein with like almost page to page. I'm like, can't bear this. Oh, this is fascinating. Oh my God, I'm going to stab him. Oh, look, no, that's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That was the world of recommendation I was putting Heinlein in there. Yeah, I think we're fine.
Fascinating stuff.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, there we go. That was The Dispossessed by Ursula Le Guin. I have been Chris Lowry. You can find me as at CM Lowry on various places on the internet. Where can we find you, Juliet?
I'm at julietkemp.com. I'm Juliet K on some social medias and Juliet on others, which is not totally helpful of me, but it's all linked from the website.
And tell us about your most recent thing that you want people to throw money at.
The most recent thing that is currently available, because I had a novella, the publisher stopped publishing recently, but the most recent thing that is currently available is The City Revealed, which is the last of my Marek series books, which does have a revolution in. And although it's the last in the series, you can actually pick it up and go from there if you like. It is the culmination of an awful lot of political and magical tensions that I've been building up over the series. And one of those is a revolution of sorts, which I had a lot of fun writing.
That sounds
not terribly anarchist, but it does have quite a lot of people arguing in pubs, which is very much my experience of
of anarchism. I'd say it's quite. I think really, if you look at most political activism, it's just, you know, if you like Tory politics, it's just the pubs are very different and kind of everyone's wearing a monocle. But I think aside from that, the general like focus of political debate is probably pretty similar. So this has been a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. If you enjoyed it, please check out our other episodes. And we have another podcast called What is Roleplay? Please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. It does magical things with an algorithm and then we'll make £1 million or, you know, £5. That'd be good. You can support us by buying stuff from our store or backing us on Patreon.com/Beyond Cataclysm. Find out more about us, our podcasts, and opportunities for submissions to our projects and more at beyondcataclysm.co.uk. Thank you very much for being on the show, Juliet. Goodbye.
Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, it's been great fun. Bye.